Huelga is strike. Viva la justicia. Justicia is justice. When I say viva la causa, when everybody yells viva. Viva la causa!
Viva!
Viva la huelga!
Viva!
Viva la justicia!
Viva!
La mañana es un radiante. Oh, bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, 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 la mañana.
After the rallies, when the vivas fade away, for Cesar Chavez and the United Farm Workers, there are harsh realities to face. The union has had its successes, notably among the table grape growers in 1970. But more recently, there have been failures, most spectacularly, with the same grape growers 3 years later. Today, the Chavez Union is in trouble, some say fighting for survival. Recently, two half-hour broadcasts by CBS News stressed the support Chavez still enjoys from the religious community in his struggle with the Teamsters Union and the clergy's support of the Chavez boycotts. Today, we are going to take another look at Cesar Chavez as growers see him and as other union men see him and his cause.
This is a CBS News special report. Chavez and the Teamsters, an update with CBS News correspondent Terry Drinkwater.
Harvest time is drawing to a close in California. Soon the frost will come. The vineyards will be pruned to lay dormant for the winter. It is a time for reassessment and reevaluation by the union leaders. 2 years ago, 60,000 farm workers were under contracts of Cesar Chavez's United Farm Workers. Today, perhaps, there are 5,000. Chavez has lost all but a handful of the contracts he fought so hard for in the 1960s. He has lost them to the Teamsters Union, which now has more than 350 contracts with California growers. Chavez has barely a dozen contracts left. In the 60s, Chavez stirred the national conscience as he forced attention to the agonies of the poorly paid farm laborers. Their cause became a fashionable one. The picketing in the fields, the boycotts in the supermarket, and the threats of other boycotts brought the growers to the bargaining tables, and they signed. For the first time in history, on a large scale, organized labor had succeeded in the fields. How did Chavez lose the contracts and the power? One example is what happened at Keen Larson's vineyards in the Coachella Valley. By the spring of this year, Larson had been under a Chavez contract for 4 years. His wife, Corky, was negotiating another contract with Chavez.
Basically, I think the negotiations were going along well. I thought we were going to get a contract.
With Chavez.
With Chavez, yes. I was very confident of a contract. And then the whole picture changed with the petition from the workers.
What did that say?
It was addressed to Mrs. and Mr. Larson. Of course, they knew I was negotiating for the ranch, and it said, please don't sign with any union. We want to be free. And it was signed by 2/3 of the workers of the crew. And that was just a complete turnabout on what I had in mind for our future.
So what did you and your husband do in terms of deciding the next course, union, no union?
I felt we had to verify that petition. So we had a very quick election the next morning.
And the results of that election were that 28 said that we do want you to sign once again with the United Farm Workers, but 60 said we do not want you to sign with the United Farm Workers Farm Workers Union.
Reverend Richard Humphreys, pastor of a nearby Catholic church, supervised the balloting.
So the petition stated the 2/3 don't want you to sign again, and the election came out approximately the same. A little better than 2/3 said we do not want you to sign once again.
Was it a fair election in your opinion?
In my opinion, it was a fair election from the standpoint that it was the only kind of election that could have been conducted under the circumstances. If a week or 10 days had been allowed for full electioneering campaigning, it would have also allowed 7 to 10 days for intimidation and fear.
Aurelia Lopez and her mother both harvest grapes in the Larson vineyards. They complained the Chavez Union forced them to pay dues whether they were working or not. How did you vote, for or against the Chavez Union?
Against Chavez, yeah. And for the same reason that it hadn't, you know, did what they promised to do. It was just, everything was reversed. Yet we had, they said we only had to pay the month we worked, and then it came out to be that we had to pay year-round, whether you work 1 month out of the year, and it didn't sound the way he said it was going to be, so I vote against it.
I vote, you know, against the union of Chavez, because the Teamsters got a better plan. They give you a good plan for medical. They give you better treatments, you know. Yeah. They treat you like, you know, the way it's supposed to be, the union's supposed to be. They don't treat you, they don't tell you, well, okay, you're not going to get the dispatch because you're not going to sign this paper or not, you know. They treat you like, you know, human being.
I was hopeful, really, that we could kind of stay in limbo and that UFW would be able to come in and convince our crew, because I really won the UFW contract. But they moved very fast and from a neutral position to the Teamsters. And we then got a petition from the Teamsters saying they represented the workers. This time we had a little more time. I called in a handwriting expert that was recommended by the bank. He verified that the petition was valid.
How has it been under the Teamster contract?
They've been firm. They've insisted on improvements as far as our outdoor, outhouses, I'll say. They have called us on things, and yet it's always in the spirit of kind of cooperative spirit. They've been very nice to deal with.
The fight between Chavez's United Farm Workers and the Teamsters has broadened beyond the California border. The AFL-CIO gave the Chavez Union more than $1 million last year to finance his fight to win back contracts lost to the independent Teamsters Union. Frequently, the United Farm Workers tried to disrupt Teamsters and other workers in the fields. Cesar Chavez recently said, "We shook the tree, and now the Teamsters are stealing the fruit." The tree shaking started a decade ago, but Chavez's greatest gains were not because he led successful strikes. Relatively few workers actually left the field. He succeeded when he did because he used the boycott. He and his followers campaigned in the cities, urging people not to buy grapes. Some didn't, mainly because many stores were afraid to carry them. In 1970, most of the growers signed contracts with Chavez. By this winter, however, Chavez had lost all but one of the table grape contracts. So now he is trying the boycott again. Keen Larson remembers the first boycott and is closely watching the new one.
In the 1968-69-70 boycott, it almost put me out of business. It almost bankrupted me. So I've had some experience that way.
And the one now, the...
Well, the one now is a real tough problem because I don't know what effect it will have, but I have no way out of the position that I'm in. I'm under contract with the Teamsters until 1977, with the AFL-CIO boycotting me at the same time. I'm in an untenable position. I have no way out of this, other than if Congress will enact legislation. That's the only way I have out of this.
They say, don't eat grapes. Now, here's a bunch of grapes. Now, you ask me, is this bunch of grapes here Teamster grapes? Is Chavez grapes? Is this Electrical Union grapes? Or is this picked by free men? There's no way of answering by looking at this bunch of grapes. This doesn't speak to you.
While Chavez was succeeding with his first grape boycott, the Teamsters were enjoying their first success in the fields, too, in lettuce. Their tactics were tough. They forced the growers to sign, largely because the truck drivers in the fields were already under Teamster contracts.
They proved to us that they did have the muscle to shut us down, as they did in July in a truck driver strike.
By 1970, most of the lettuce fields in California were under the Teamsters. The workers we talked to said they were satisfied.
How do you like it?
Pretty good. I work well. You get a lot of money.
Well, the guys that I've talked to that work out here, they seem to think that it's better for them, even the field crew. It seems to me like we're happier this way, one of everybody.
Chavez has been far less successful than the Teamsters in signing contracts with the lettuce growers. So again, as in grapes, he turned to the boycott. Don't buy lettuce, he's been saying since 1971. But even in places like the Democratic National Convention, where you might expect serious support, the lettuce boycott wasn't considered much more than a joke.
Delegates and fellow lettuce boycotters.
Today, the lettuce business is still good. Growers are concerned, but not panicked.
I think that people are very conscious that someone's telling them not to buy lettuce. However, as far as our sales volume goes, and I think this is in general, not only our company, but in general, I don't think that that people have stopped buying lettuce.
You think they will?
No, I don't think so.
Why?
Because it's like a staple food. It's a part of their daily diet. If they can buy a decent head of lettuce at the right price, why, I think they're going to demand it just like they demand a loaf of bread.
Only one lettuce grower still has a contract with Chavez. It's the same food conglomerate that retails Chiquita bananas. The company declined to talk about it, but industry sources say the company is fearful of a boycott, not against their lettuce, but against Chiquita bananas. One reason Chavez never got very far in lettuce, and a major reason why he lost so many great contracts, is his insistence on the union hiring hall. The union must have control, Chavez believes, of who works and where. Traditionally, in farm labor, the grower has had that authority, or the grower has hired contractors to supply the labor force. The Teamsters still allow the grower and the contractor these prerogatives, but Chavez wants his own hiring halls. Rancher Jack Pandle told Jim Kilpatrick why he believes the Chavez system doesn't work.
You see, we couldn't hire anybody. The union has to do the hiring. So we go with a request to the union hall, the foreman, and sometimes they have to wait an hour, sometimes 4 or 5 hours, sometimes a couple of days. And then many times the workers have come back to us and says the union says, no, Pandle doesn't need anybody. They sent him somewhere else. And yet we wanted this. And these were seniority people. This was our contractual agreement and our right. If they did dispatch them, sometimes it take a day or two, and they have to wait 48 hours before they come to work. All this time, we could have used the people, they could have used the money. And the union makes them pay back dues and everything else beforehand.
The one table grape grower still with Chavez is Lionel Steinberg, who thinks his workers prefer the Chavez union.
We've been involved with United Farm Workers for 4 years, and I must acknowledge that they've undergone serious growing pains, and part of it has resulted in inexperienced people at the ranch level providing a good deal of hassling and unfriendly relationships. But this year there's been a marked improvement in the administration of the union. I feel that finally some of their growing pains are over.
Larry Itleong was an organizer in the fields even before Chavez, and later worked with him for years, but broke with his old friend and the United Farm Workers in 1971. Itleong charged that Chavez demanded his followers do things that really were not in their own economic interest.
She tells the people here, said, hey, you guys come up to Salinas, huh? We go there for 2-3 days. And if you don't come, well, you know what's going to happen. When the Filipinos and the Chicanos that doesn't participate on demonstrations goes to the hiring hall of the farm workers and tries to get a job, they can't get a job because they are penalized for not doing what Cesar Chavez tells them to do. But you have a choice. You belong to the farm workers union, you can get a job. You belong to the Teamsters, at least you got a job and you can eat.
Chavez has made mistakes, but without the competition from the Teamsters, he might have succeeded. His rival union has proved to be an adversary even more formidable than the growers. From their headquarters in a suburb of San Francisco, William Grammy has directed the Teamster organizing effort. He still calls Chavez's union by its original name, UFLOC. We asked him why so many growers have signed with the Teamsters.
Well, I think we're the lesser of two evils. I think the growers would like no union, rather than they would like the Teamsters or UFLOC. However, the Teamsters, from a grower standpoint, have a track record that makes better sense to them. We have the reputation for being a very aggressive bargaining union. However, during the course of our agreements, we also have the reputation for living up to the agreements that we've come to.
Why is it that Chavez has lost so many contracts to Teamsters over the last 2 years?
It isn't that Chavez has lost the contracts of Teamsters. It's that the Teamsters have moved in and collusion with the growers, have entered into contracts, sweetheart contracts, between themselves, without any consultation or any support from the workers themselves. So it isn't that he has lost the contracts. It's that the Teamsters and the growers together have, in a sense, stolen the contracts from the workers.
Was it a sweetheart contract in any sense with the Teamsters?
In no way. I went into negotiations. I picked the standard Teamster contract. It ended up, because of what we were paying the year before, that we are now paying the highest wage in the table grape industry in the state of California.
There are those who say that you, in effect, stole the contracts from Chavez and his union. How do you respond to that?
The number of agreements that we've, if you could say, taken from Chavez as a result of his people expressing a desire for the Teamster representation is approximately 60 agreements. The number of agreements that the Teamsters hold at this point is close to 360 agreements. And consequently, only a very small portion, or a relatively small portion of those agreements were previously Chavez agreements. But the disenchantment on the part of the workers in the Chavez organization in practice, VS, the Chavez organization that UFWAC espoused initially, was the reason for the acquisition of those agreements.
Chavez's newest thrust is again in the wine grape vineyards. In 1967, his United Farm Workers signed many of the major brand wineries after little more than a threat of a boycott. But last year, the largest of the wineries, Gallo, let the United Farm Workers contract run out and then signed with the Teamsters. To gain back that loss, Chavez is pushing a boycott of Gallo wines.
The union right now is in a very terrible position that the only way we can do it is by the public. And they themselves will boycott, but they also get involved. They leaflet, they come around, and they ask me, you know, what more they can do. And as you see here, they hold billboards explaining to people not to buy the grapes, the Gallo wine, and the head lettuce.
Gallo's been caught in the middle of something, which is really more a jurisdictional dispute between two unions, and they really have no control over their own destiny. I wouldn't like to see it happen to us. It would be inconvenient, but I don't think it would destroy us, certainly.
Gallo says the company signed with the Teamsters because the majority of the workers in their vineyards preferred the Teamsters. Gallo, Chavez, and the Teamsters now all say they want elections to decide once and for all between the unions, but they can't agree on election procedures. Although Gallo sells more than a third of all the wine consumed in this country, in terms of workers involved, this dispute is small indeed. Gallo has only 200 permanently employed in the vineyards, plus 300 more during the harvest season. Most of Gallo's grapes are purchased from other growers. The national AFL-CIO is supporting the Chavez boycotts of lettuce and grapes, but not the Gallo boycott. Other AFL-CIO unions have contracts with Gallo in the wineries, and their workers oppose the boycott.
I'm kind of puzzled that people support any of these boycotts because the effect of the boycott is so indirect as far as really aiding farm workers. There's very little aid that can be given to farm workers by and large by boycott activities. I think people have enough trouble these days. Consumers have enough difficulties just finding commodities at a reasonable price.
Brother Ben Heller of the Irish Christian Brothers, Father Alan McCoy, Provincial of the Franciscans, Father Dan Brown of the Servites, Sister Patricia Connor of the Marymount Sisters.
In last month's broadcast on Chavez, the emphasis on church support of Gallo and other boycotts showed the militancy of the clergy.
Father Barry Stenger of the Franciscans, Father William Del Orfano of the Franciscans.
Monsignor George Higgins spoke for the National Council of Catholic Bishops.
I don't think it's the role of the clergy to be involved in ordinary jurisdictional disputes between two unions, the kind of disputes that go on all the time. But this is not a jurisdictional dispute. This is a straight, collusive steal of your contracts, and the Teamsters can cry all they want. They can make desperate efforts to persuade the public that we're getting involved in an area in which we have no right to be involved, but they're not going to succeed. We're going to stay in it until the farm workers get their jurisdiction back. I think I ought to report also that while there may be an occasional difference of opinion in the Catholic community over this issue, the overwhelming majority of the American bishops are supporting this struggle. I represent them in my office in Washington. I'm here speaking for the National Conference of Catholic Bishops. We stand in support of the resolution which was adopted last November, which was to support the boycott of lettuce and grapes until such time as free elections are held.
I feel definitely that Mr. Chavez has misused the church and misled it, because in church publications, not only Catholic Church, but all the other churches, I find that they are repeating all those lies and that they give a completely prejudicial view, both of the grower's position and of the Teamster's position, that they never objectively state their side of the picture. I feel that we have to have a much more balanced church position. As it stands now, we say nothing whatever good about the grower. We practically accuse him of being a liar and a cheat, and then we expect him to listen to us. I think that we must not drive growers out of the Catholic Church. I feel that we are doing so. I feel that we can honestly present his statement, what he's doing, what he's capable of doing, what he's not capable of doing. We can speak of him as an honest, decent citizen. I think that we can say the same thing with regard to the Teamsters and All Justice, too. I think that we must reassess our position and see that our boycott has actually prevented free elections, and put all of our weight on getting a decent state or federal election bill, which the boycott is not doing and never will do, as far as I can see, just the boycott alone. I feel that church pressure should be placed there.
Chavez, the Teamsters, the growers. There is bitterness and frustration in the fields, reminiscent of the labor movement in the 1930s, when industrial corporations were fighting any unionization at all, when the AFL and the CIO were fighting each other in the years long before they merged, and when the government was without the labor laws to bring order.
The Teamsters are just Johnny-come-latelys. They have never tried to help the farm workers in the past. And the farm workers know that. And after all the hard work and the struggle and the strikes and the boycotts, which finally established a farm workers union for the first time in history, after many, many decades of failures in the past, the Teamsters now come in an effort to destroy that which the workers themselves built.
Well, I don't have a crystal ball, but we're pragmatic, you know, and we've been at this business longer than anyone around now. And so there are certain judgments we can make. We can be reasonably sure that we're going to win those contracts back. We're reasonably sure that we're going to succeed in organizing farm workers. We're reasonably sure that we're going to be able to really change the social and economic life of these workers and affect in a very direct way. We're sure we're going to remain a nonviolent movement for, I guess, I hope forever, but for a long time to come. And everything else, we're sure of our faith. That we're sure of. We'll stay here until we win.
Cesar Chavez, without question, made a historical contribution to the farm worker. He doubled farm wages in the last 5 years. He increased the health standards, such as toilets in the field, paper drinking cups, breaks for rest periods. He certainly made historic breakthroughs that all farm workers throughout the United States will benefit by. but he is certainly against the ropes right now, and his survival is certainly in doubt, whether he and his union will survive. He will always, I think, be a political factor in the United States. I think that his future depends upon the results in the California State Legislature in 1975. What kind of legislation controlling farm workers and elections, secret ballot elections, comes out of the state legislature? He might get some help if the legislation is favorable to him.
In the sense that we've provided the most efficient and effective system of representation for the workers, I think that we have beaten Chavez, in the sense that there's still some public support for Chavez, and that this will continue for some time. I think the battle's still on.
For the last 5 years, what we've been through has been a mess, and I think it's because we have no farm labor law, and that I think it's going to keep on being a mess until Congress includes us in the National Labor Relations Act. The workers deserve it. In the long run, it'll be good for United Farm Workers, it'll be good for Teamsters, it'll be good for the growers, because it'll give us orderly unionization.
In California and in Washington, the lawmakers are saying maybe next year, but they have been saying that for years. The elusive goal is to get labor laws for farm workers equal to those which protect industrial workers. Meanwhile, another factor has emerged in the economics of California agriculture, the machine. It is already being used to pick a few wine grapes, replacing men and women in the vineyards. Tomatoes and cotton are now harvested mostly by machine. With lettuce and some other crops, it's possible, though still expensive. Overall, growers believe more mechanization is definitely ahead. So, whatever the outcome of the battle between the Teamsters and Cesar Chavez, the irony is that in the coming years, there will probably be fewer and fewer farm workers in the fields. Terry Drinkwater, CBS News.
This has been a CBS News special report. Chavez and the Teamsters, an update.
Lamp Under My Feet will return next Sunday morning at 10, 9 Central on most of these stations.
...of the Nice War, and then I visited Germany. It is humorously referred to as the loser. Folks, I tell you, if the next war is anything like the last one, I wouldn't give you a 5-cent piece to be the winner. War is the only game where everybody loses. Why do we keep playing it? I don't understand it, honestly. Well, who says I'm supposed to? I don't. Let's have a little change of pace now, and we'll do a little rope trick for you. And something you've got to understand about this is that there's no such thing as a big rope trick. They're all little. Now, that ain't it. That's it. I believe it's the first rope trick I ever learned, honestly, in my life. It's a silly little thing, what you call a knot trick, and I learned it from a black man on my father's farm, a man named Dan Walker, and he taught me this. He got me started on all this roping stuff, see? And my mother, God bless her, she used to say, "Will, you're roping and you should be reading," and mother was right, of course, you know, but mother's is a special breed. A mother in Moscow can talk to a mother in Nebraska and never miss a word, you know. Man of my wife, Betty, today. Betty, I said, you know, mothers and dogs is the only thing in the world that will give you eternal love. You know, no matter how you treat them, they always give you love and understanding. And my wife made me cut the dog out. She was right. You know, the dog didn't belong in there. I certainly meant no disrespect to mothers at all. You know, We have Mother's Day. Maybe sometime we'll have Dog Day. Make it up to Fido there. I'm stalling because I don't think this is going to work. See? I don't know what to do. Well, let's have a go at it and do it fast, and maybe nobody will notice, see? Just give her a pull and see what happens. And by golly, it worked. I didn't mean it, but it looked like it, didn't it? But I know, listen, don't applaud that. It ain't bad for a four-year-old kid, but for a grown man, it's a But I'd like to say a word about my father, if I might. My father, he was a father, is what he was. And from time to time, he used to say, well, you ought to get out and do a little work around the place, see? And being a son, I wouldn't do any at all, naturally. But I just practiced my rope trick, see? And that's how I come to get on the stage, and it spoiled me for any honest work, you know? But I stole money with this little rope all over the world, and boy, I've had some great times with it, I'll tell you. Now, I was after the tie, and I meant it. I wanted to get the tie there. Now, did you notice what the problem